Welcome to Mortgage Sales Playbook. I'm Pat Sherlock, your host. My podcasts are where top producers, sales leaders, and industry experts share strategies that drive real sales success. No fluff, just actionable insights to help you master the art of selling and leading. Today, I have a terrific topic, and I can't wait to discuss it with our industry expert, and that is the branch manager misalignment and its impact on lenders' profitability. And I'm excited to have Richard Roydell, who is CEO of Princeton Mortgage. Richard's had a long career within financial services. He was at Goldman Sachs, been in the mortgage business, done everything in the world of mortgage lending and financial services. So hi, Richard. Hi, Rich.
Hey, Pat, thanks for having me on.
Well, I love your post, and I have to recommend to everybody that's listening today that he has the best posts, I think, on LinkedIn. I love reading them. They're very astute. They talk about real-world issues, and this is one that caught my eye about the cost at the branch manager level and this misalignment. So I had to have you on to talk about that. So why don't you explain for our listeners what you were talking about in the blog, and then we can go from there.
So specifically, I think a couple of years ago, we identified, and the whole industry has identified this, the biggest problem is that the costs to produce a loan are more than the revenues per loan. And so if we go back to the MBA data from, I think they started tracking in 2003, from 2003 through 2020, there was only two unprofitable quarters. I think it was like Q3 of 08 or something like that. And then again in 2018. But after that, we were always profitable as an industry. And then coming out of the 21 COVID cycle, we went through nine quarters of unprofitability, and still, generally speaking, the majority of lenders are still, we're 3 years into this. And so what sort of we started thinking about in kind of 23 was that maybe there is a different paradigm shift that's happening. From the Carter era through 21, interest rates were coming down. And so it was a boom time in the mortgage industry. Rates would go up a little bit. You just had to make it through a year, and then they'd come back down. And then rates would go up, go through a year, and boom, you keep going. And in that type of an environment, you can just do average, because average is good enough. If everybody else is making 50 to 100 basis points, if you do what everybody else is doing, mortgage banking was a great business. And the old adage when I joined in 2017 was, hey, Rich, it's a simple business. You earn 3 points, you pay originators a point, your cost reduces a point, you make a point. Don't overcomplicate it. Well, that paradigm's not working any longer. And so the post was about, and what I was thinking, that the industry just has this huge cost problem. And I think for a huge issue within that is the misalignment, and the solutions that sort of I see happening is it's always taking from somebody else. So it's like branch manager wins at originator's expense, or originator wins at borrower's expense, or company wins at branch expense. And what we sort of said is like, hey, that's not going to be a good long-term strategy. Mm-hmm. If one of the key parts of the equation is losing or winning at somebody's expense, what would it look like if we tried to approach this problem from a, hey, costs are $12,000 a loan, revenue's $10,500. We have to at least shave $2,000 a loan as an industry. And also at Princeton, the same math at that time. That's always one of the humbling things about the MBA data is you think you're doing great. You're like, hey, and then you read the data and you're like, oh, we're like everybody else. Now, thankfully, we're not living that world anymore. But that sort of data-driven approach says, okay, but what if we do this in a way that enhances the pie for everyone involved? And we sort of think about everyone involved being the borrower, the most important, the originator, the branch managers, our operations team, and then the company as well. And so like all five of them need to be better off. And if you can do that, you build a moat and a competitive advantage that gives you in a commoditized business a little bit of a chance to gain market share.
So what are your thoughts? And the point that you also made in the blog is that you were talking about that there's so many hands in the pie, and that these hands in the pie really have a cost to them that sometimes I don't know that lenders really actually recognize. And obviously on the loan officer side, there's a lot of folks that have their hand in the pie before it gets to the originator. So talk about that issue.
Yeah, and I'll say that's an interesting issue. So Strathmore put out a report maybe a year ago that said the cost of sales leadership on average across the industry is 85 basis points, right? And so when you start thinking about that, it's $8,500 per $1 million of loans produced. Okay, so like just huge issue. And you start to think about a lot of the overrides, whether it's at the branch level, the loan originator level, regionals, areas, P&Ls, under P&Ls, you start doing all that. A lot of those deals got structured for a much smaller loan size. You know, when I got going in 2017, the conforming loan limit was still, going to screw this up, but like 417,000. And today we're, 800s and a million in some markets. And so when you start talking about 10 and 20 basis points on a $250,000 loan, talking about $250. You start talking about 20 basis points on a $750,000 loan, right? You start approaching $1,000 a loan in overrides and different things like that. But I would say that the overrides are a huge part of it. What I'd say is a bigger issue, and they're all intertwined, is the misunderstanding of productivity is the biggest driver of costs. And I think that a lot of the industry doesn't have the accounting to really deeply understand that. And it's something that we've had to work really hard at developing our own proprietary ways of doing it. But the basic example that I'll give, let's take two originators. At most companies, the fixed cost per originator is around $2,000. Maybe it's $1,500, maybe it's $2,500. But if you look at the healthcare, call that $1,000. Call technology, so their Microsoft Office, their OB, their hardware, all that stuff is probably about $500. And then another 500 between marketing and corporate allocation and stuff like that. If you're doing one loan a month, your fixed cost, just using that small example, is 2,000 a loan. If you're doing four loans a month as an originator, your fixed cost per loan is $500. And it gets even wilder when you look at an originator that's doing a loan every other month. Their fixed cost per loan becomes $4,000 a loan, 2,000 times two. So they don't close a loan, they go negative 2 grand, they close a loan, they got to carry it over. And so what happens from a pricing strategy standpoint or a compensation strategy standpoint, you wind up pricing those two loan originators the same or paying them the same. And that's very unfair in my perspective because we have to be careful about fair lending and all those types of things so that the originator that's doing four loans a month versus the originator doing one loan a month, the four loan originator could have 50 basis points at least better pricing and still maintain the same compensation and profitability as the person doing one loan a month. I first got introduced to this idea in 2012. I think there was a slide deck going around from Netflix at the time, and I think it was pretty famous, the culture deck from Netflix. And they had a slide in there that said pay unfairly. I was like, what? Everybody's talking about fair pay. Why is it saying pay unfairly? I'm saying paying people fairly is actually very unfair because of the difference in performance. And I think they gave some examples of, if your average creative person or programmer is here, your best performer might be 10x output than average, but they're only paid 25 or 30% more, where they should be paid 10x more. And that really got me thinking about sort of results-based compensation. And then when you put the accounting behind it, you start to realize as a mortgage industry, the sort of way that the conventional wisdom thinks about pricing and compensation on the sales, the ops, the creative side really winds up being unfair. In that we are over margining our top producers or underpaying, right? The different sides at the same time. And your lower and average producers are either under margined or overpaid when you start to really look at the accounting and the cost to produce with that.
Well, that runs into one of my favorite topics because I talk about this all the time, because you're really talking about why has this happened? And it's happened because if you look at Strathmore Data and Ingenious and all of these other folks, we know that 50% of the loan officers aren't doing basically enough business to actually warrant keeping them. But yet, when you look at the lack of leadership to address this issue, that's why the overperformers are supporting the underperformers, and lenders seem to be, or managers seem to be just fine with that, which is really the fundamental issue.
So I think I feel bad for a lot of branch managers. Like really, because and the analogy that I use is the blind leading the unprofitable. They don't have the information to be able to make informed decisions about this. And so then it becomes gut feelings, emotions, and like all of that stuff. If you have the numbers and you have the accounting, the what do they say? Facts don't have feelings, right? And this isn't like a cruel thing. It's just, hey, here's the math. Now that you have the math, make decisions based on that. And that becomes very compassionate because I think most branch managers and originators really have blinders onto this. Where, I was talking to a group last week on the branch side, right? So forgetting corporate margin, just branch margin. The branch manager was bragging that they're holding 300 basis points. Okay. And he also lost his one good producer that they built from like 15 million, 20 million, and 30 million. And he's like, you know, but she just needed new horizons and a change. I disagree. I think that if I was a 20 or $30 million producer, and I'm making 100 basis points or 120 basis points, why on earth would I be in a position where the sales margin on top of me is another 200 basis points? We've got loan originators at Princeton within branches that the total gross margin, right, company and branch is 270 to 280 basis points. And they've got their expenses so low at both the company and the branch level that they're able to make 150 to 170 basis points in compensation while beating the market by 25 basis points in price. And so when you start to look at that, you know, I think that the average non-commission sales expense, so ignoring commissions, but all the other expenses at the branch level
Right.
is around 80 to 120 basis points, depending on what's a branch expense, corporate expense, but that's what it looks like. So you're in the like $3,000 to $4,000 a loan range. And so that would be credit reports, rent, marketing, processor, LOA, and manager compensation. We've gotten that number down to 40 basis points. So when you start to think about that, when you're a loan originator, in many situations, if your branch is so unproductive that they need to have another 200 basis points on top of your compensation, where there's models like Princeton that were running at 40 to 50 basis points of sales expense on top of it, it's just playing entirely different games. And I think that one of the things that I misunderstood in the past was that lower expenses mean you're giving up something. It was only once we really understood that productivity is the biggest driver of cost that it means you can actually do more and invest more and spend more money. But if you're dividing it out over more loans per person, your cost per funded loan goes down.
So productivity is actually driven by one of my other favorite topics, the quality of the personnel. I mean, that's what it really boils down to. And I would make the other comment, and Rich, I'd love to hear your thoughts. The accounting systems are there. I mean, they've actually been there. I think this industry is very unique in the aspect that they really don't have a true P&L per person. This is something that they kind of want to do it, but they don't really want to do it because the system supports so many large underperformers. I mean, that's what it comes down to. And they're tolerated, is how I see it. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm thankful that everybody's doing it the way that you just described.
So I think the accounting systems are there. I think it's a making a choice in the leadership level to decide what exactly your business should look like. And I do think the tolerance of underperformers is really the heart of the problem. And at the end of the day, they just find it impossible to want to change, even when they know they should. I mean, I hear it all day long that firing is hard. They don't want to
Well, I
do
think
it.
these are cultural issues,
Yeah,
right?
I do.
Meaning,
I agree.
and I think for a long, so like one of the ways that I'm very close with a lot of people at Princeton Mortgage, but the relationship is a professional relationship. And so what I mean by that is it's a performance-based relationship. And
Right.
so if Princeton Mortgage, I would say, hey, there should be some grace. Let's call it like 6 months of grace because the originators might hit a hard spot. The company might hit hard spots where things aren't going perfectly. We should give each other a little bit of time to figure it out. But beyond that, if Princeton Mortgage isn't competitive on compensation, rates, and fulfillment, then eventually our loan originator should leave. And vice versa, if an originator is not able to fulfill their responsibilities, i.e., be profitable and put good loans through, then there should be a separation event. So we think about it as a professional sports team where we understand the
Yeah.
standards, right? So there's no drama around it. We know what we're getting into.
Right.
But we're also, other companies run it differently, which is fine, where they use words like we're a family and we're doing this together and that type of stuff. Well, I think unfortunately that often leads to a false sense of security and manipulation because if you're telling everybody, look, here's my family, I love them, and I'm stuck with them. No matter what they do or how they behave, they are my family. It's unconditional love. And so the definition for me of family is unconditional love. It's not performance-based, it's not results-based, it's hey, we're family. I don't think in a professional environment that's the way that we choose to think about it. We want to be loyal, we want to be compassionate, we want to be patient, but at the same time, there's standards with which we need to meet because I think that, and then so if companies have been not paying attention to that stuff for a very long time, I think it's a huge culture shock to start to say, hey, suddenly the numbers and the math and the financials matter. When for the longest time it was, those things don't matter. We're in this together as a family.
Well, I also think, and you raise, I agree with you 100%. Maybe it's a Wall Street thinking because I think like that myself. It's just, this is a business and we have to have a return. And so this is not a charity. This is not any of the things that may tolerate that. And then I pondered the thought of why has this really been settled so long in the industry? And I keep coming back that there's not enough younger executives like yourself. I think we have a lot of folks in our industry that have been in the industry a very long time, which is not a negative, but is an issue of we now have to look at it in a different way, and it seems to be very hard.
Yeah, I can't comment on that
Yes,
one way or
sure.
the other. I mean, like I think we had 40 years. I think if you look at any industry or the federal government or anything, when you're in a boom time, scarcity breeds resourcefulness. I had Thad
Right.
Wong, who I don't think you'd mind me saying this, he built and runs At Properties, one of the, I think it was like the sixth largest real estate brokers in the world before they sold to Compass. And back in like 23, we were texting, and he was like, Rich, this market will either put you out of business or turn you into a great operator. And I think there's real truth in that. And those that the historical wisdom said, hey, wait this out, right? So we all spent 23 thinking there was going to be back to normal in 24. Then we spent all of 24 thinking we're going to be back to normal in 25. Then we spent 25 thinking we're going to be back to normal in 26. And this is a historical anomaly. I don't think the industry has really gone through, after the Carter era, years of really depressed mortgage business. And I go back to like the amount of damage it did with all of the talking heads saying that rates are going to come down, rates are going to come down, rates are going to come down. Because then you're like, you hold on. There's no point
Sure.
in going through all of the pain of radical transformation. And I'll say that like we spent 22 thinking that Q1 of 23, I think rates came down, it felt good, volume went up. We're like, oh, you make it. Q2 of 23 rates go back up. And we decided as a leadership team and a company to say, hey, let's assume that rates are going to stay and that the quantity of purchase transactions is going to stay where they're at. It's not going to improve. If we were to start a mortgage company today, what would you do to design it to thrive in this business? And that turned out to be the right decision in hindsight. And that kind of thinking got us to rip the business apart from top to down and say, what would you do differently? And there's just everywhere you look, there's opportunity. I mean, just
Right.
it, you think like once you get done all the obvious stuff, then you realize, oh, there's so much more work to do. I mean, the very basic math, just to like, I met with a company last week that said their goal this year was to get their processors to be able to handle 15 units a month. Okay, cool, good goal. Well, at 15 units a month and a $7,000 probably average processor cost, maybe it's $8,000 by the time you have salary, benefits, healthcare, payroll taxes, and all that. That's about $600 alone. At 25 units a month, you're at $280. So the difference between 15 units and 25 units a month is like $300. When we look at underwriting, just to like, I think this is where I really say that productivity matters. At 1.5 underwrites a day, which I think most of the industry said like 1.5 to 2 new underwrites a
Right.
day, you're talking about a $300 to a $350 underwriting cost, assuming you're at full capacity for the year. I'm using annual numbers, right? Because right now everybody's up. If you get that to, so it's $350. If you can get to 3 new underwrites a day, you're talking about like $150 to $175 in underwriting. And so just moving the needle from like 2 underwrites to 3 underwrites or 15 closings per processor to 20 has these huge benefits. And the way that you can move the needle on that stuff is actually by reducing error and rework and streamlining your workflows. And the benefit of doing all that stuff is there's fewer problems, there's less drama, there's less conflict between your originators and your operations team. People are spending less time doing, we call it the nuisance work. My dad used to call it like the burr in the saddle for a horse. They don't notice it until they do, and then they're kicking and bucking. And you start to get rid of all that noise, and things just start going better. And then your cost per loan decreases. And then your rates get better. And then you win more borrowers over. Then you get a reputation where realtors and borrowers want to refer. I mean, what's the worst thing? That's great. You're a branch manager. You held 300 basis points. Corporate held another 100. So you're 400 bips. Your customer's like, yay, this was great. Until they sit down at the dinner table with their friends for their housewarming party. And they're like, somebody goes, what was your rate? And they're like, 7.25. And the other person's like, wow. I just got 6 6.75 on my rate. Now they hate you and they're never referring anybody to you because they feel like they got taken advantage of. And so I see it on social media, I see it on LinkedIn, all about like use this tool, you'll hold more margin, hold more margin, hold more margin. We don't have a margin problem, I don't think, in the
I agree.
industry. And I see
I
it
agree.
all the time, this low margin environment. Well, we forget the average loan size went from 275 to like 400,000.
Right.
So when you're talking about bips, the bips might be lower, but the dollars per loan in revenue, if you take 20 and 21 out of it, are higher than they've ever been. So we're bringing in more dollars per loan, but we're complaining that there's not a, that we have a revenue problem. I don't see it that way.
No, I agree with you 100%, which raises the question, since you recruit all the time, are we assuming as leaders, or maybe your competitors are assuming, that the loan officer doesn't understand this math?
Well, I'd say that the loan originators in general, not all of them, don't, because there's a lot of people that have benefited from them not understanding it.
Correct.
And it also wasn't as important in the past. I mean, I remember in 17, 18, 19, I called it like the great arms race in mortgage. Every recruit I talked to, what kind of leads are you going to give me? Do I get an LOA? Can I have my
Yeah,
own
sure.
processor? Can I have my own lease? Right? Because there was excess profits. It was give the loan originators as much as you can. And so that's been, a decade of that. Well, the problem is companies have given to the point where they can't afford the amount of support, the lack of productivity, and all those types of things. And so in my experience has been very rewarding that, we've brought our loan originators into the problem. I'm a big believer that if you're not part of the problem, you can't be part of the solution. And if we look at the total expenses per loan, let's call it 300 basis points for rough math, which is about $12,000 on a $400,000 loan, that the sales expense is two-thirds of that when you add
Correct.
it all together. And so the idea that the company alone, just on the corporate side, is going to make a big difference on rates is not true, because they're only one-third of the total cost. And so when you bring originators into the problem, you say, hey, here's all of the math, here's all the accounting, here's everything that's going on. And you start to show them, here's where you're operating, here's where other people are operating. Things that I wanted originators to do that we talk about and coach and cajole for years, and they never made movement. Within 90 to 180 days, once they understand it, they're taught, and the benefit can accrue to them, they just, all those problems got fixed. So I think that 75% of originators, in my experience, are very reasonable. They want to learn. They want to understand it. They want to know how they're contributing to it, but they've been kept in the dark for a very long time and misled. And so then oftentimes you have sales managers, not all of them, there's great guys out there. But I mean, I saw a team recently where they were at a company and we were talking to the team and talking to the head of sales. The head of sales was a huge problem. His compensation was out of whack, everything going on, not interested. He leaves, right? And I'm sure from the company's perspective, they're like, this guy is the problem. But the originators were like, our rates are horrible, or this, our comp, all this stuff. I agree. They followed that guy, and he's the problem, right? But what he's doing is positioning himself that he's the protector of the originators against the company. And so you
Right.
get these like huge misalignments going on. And I think you see it, every day on LinkedIn, there's another big sales leader switching around. Sometimes it's the company's fault for sure. Sometimes it's the originator's fault. But a lot of times it's the way that that person is structuring it, and then kind of doing this and making everybody, he or she is standing in the middle, benefiting at the expense of the originator and the expense of the company. And I think more and more people are waking up to that. And so the only people that are scared of sunshine are those that have something to hide, right? And so when you build a model that can be reasonable and says, hey, Pat, if you're reasonable, I'm going to be reasonable. I'm going to share everything, and two reasonable people should be able to agree. That's it. And if we can't come to agreement, knowing all of the facts, then one of us is probably being unreasonable. Well, then there should be a separation event. And so when two people have the same information, usually they can come to an agreement. But I think
So
there's, go ahead.
I was going to say, so let's look out maybe to 2030. Let's move out further. I mean, obviously, we're still whittling away the underperformers. Some companies have happened faster than other companies, but the point is, do you see this? And really, your model is kind of predicated on the assumption of those that can really sell come to you, and you will receive obviously a better deal because you're providing, in essence, low cost, co that in essence, they have more access to making more money, which is really kind of the model that you're saying. And I think that's the model going forward. Okay. So, because at the end of the day, it's smaller teams, but more profitable teams. Is that what you see, or how do you kind of see this looking?
So I think there's going to be over the next couple of years, excuse me, a huge differentiation, and we're already seeing it in cost performance. I think it's interesting. And Princeton's a smaller company, and for a while that was not popular. 23, right? Everybody's like, oh, you got to go to a big company, you got to a big company. The speed at which smaller companies can tune up for this market and tune up for that is just light years ahead of much larger companies, right? And like, that's just the mechanics of the speed with which we can make decisions and do things. And the magic about increasing productivity and decreasing costs is really that you're decreasing errors and drama. You're not having problems. You're not fighting fires. And so then it leads to that intangible of, if I'm an originator, and I mean the accordion that originators go through. I closed 6 million last month, but then I closed 1 million this month because I got sucked into dealing with all of my loans and the problems. I'm exhausted and my marriage is struggling and I miss my kids thing. So as you start to fix or make it easier to do loans, you can spend more time generating the loans. And then the next thing that I think is happening is that there's a flattening, which in the let's call it, so I think for the next 3 years, you're going to see really different levels of performance from operational standpoints. And I think it was not that different for the last couple of years because everybody had extra capacity and everybody was doing well. We're seeing it now where it's like, whoa, we're actually very much outperforming operationally. That wasn't something we would talk about a lot because everybody was doing well. Now people are like, wow, I'm looking to make a move because it's really difficult to do a loan, right? I'm having trouble getting my loans closed. I'm fighting with underwriting. I've got issues with closing. My CD didn't go out and I missed it. Those types of things are problematic again. I think some companies really cut to the bone. The other thing I think is happening is a great flattening because technology is taking away the advantage of being really great at doing your job. And so I'll think about, software programmers a couple of years ago would have been like $200 an hour if you went to a dev shop, $50 an hour now if you go to a dev shop, because the distance between a great programmer and an average one is not that big anymore because AI's really changed that paradigm. I think you're going to see that within processing, within underwriting, within closing, and then within originators. So if you were a great originator for 20 years, and we're seeing this, and you got your business because you had a good reputation, and realtors knew if they sent you a loan, you did a good job, and you structured them appropriately, and your pre-quals and your pre-approvals meant it was a good deal, that's going away, right? And so now we're seeing originators who have much less experience, aren't as knowledgeable at scenarios, haven't been through the ringer, beating much better originators because they're mastering marketing and sales. And so I think the skill sets of marketing and sales are going to become even more important. And I think it's going to become even more unfair because not everybody's going to be good at it. Marketing is a skill set. Just posting a five-star review and pictures of your family on vacation doesn't do it. That's not a marketing strategy. How do you use social media in a way that accomplishes your goal of generating revenue? And I think that's like another big insight. The goal, I like to ask this question, like, what's the goal of marketing? Say all sorts of things to generate revenue. And when you start to think about marketing and social media, it's the most tremendous opportunity for an originator to get attention in their marketplace and attract people. And you can do it at scale for free.
Well, that's right up my alley. I talk about I teach that every day, but let's talk I think to give an idea to our audience, what is the best like loan officer that would be a match for what you're looking for? I'm curious on what is it that you look at when you're looking at the loan officer when you're in your recruiting stage?
So the w some level of autonomy, not meaning that they don't need help, but that they don't need to be micromanaged. Our model's not built. We've got tons of support, but we don't want to have to micromanage people to be like, let's tell
Sure.
you what to do. The second thing is that they're doing four more units a month, and typically they're inside of a branch, right? And they're like, I don't really know what I'm getting from my branch manager, and I don't really, That's where it's just an absolute slam dunk. We've brought over some really heavy hitters recently, and it's just wild, right? So what happened was they were originators inside of a branch. They're typically, 5 years or less in the, I've got guys that have been long time, but what happened was they came up the growth cycles. They did 10 million, 20 million, 30 million,
Right.
and suddenly they realized, wait a second, I'm leaving a huge amount of money on the table, right? There's different models that I can get into within that. And then the other is branch managers that want to do it differently and better and be able to attract and retain those 20, 30, and $40 million producers. Because what I'd say is, in not all situations, but in most situations, if you're the top producer in your branch, but you're not the branch manager, I think there's probably tremendous opportunities for those people.
Well, Rich, I love talking with you because I agree 100% with what you're talking about. How about a couple takeaways for our listeners today?
One of the most painful things is confronting reality. And pain becomes that motivator. And so I suggest that for salespeople, if they want above the average execution, what I mean by that is better rates and or better comp, right? And those two things go together, then you need to be a better business person than the average originator. And I don't think that you should delegate that to somebody else. I've had to learn those lessons the hard way in my career. I wanted to focus on sales and marketing and technology and those cool things, and outsource sort of accounting responsibility and really understanding the drivers and fixed costs and variable costs and margins and pricing and all that type of stuff. Oh, hire CFOs, we'll just figure it out. It's once I came to deeply understand those things, that's where you find the advantage in it. And so for an originator or branch manager that doesn't understand deeply their numbers, how they should be pricing, the difference in cost per funded loan between their people, well, they're I hear people running, oh, we're closing 20 loans a month. And we've got two processors, two LOAs, and a marketing person. I'm like, okay, so you're spending like 5,000 a loan at least. They're like, yes. I'm like, dude, you're gonna lose. You're not gonna be able to retain good originators in that. And so I think understanding your business, if you want to outperform, is the place to start.
Well, that's it's such a simple thought, but it's so powerful because it's so true. Because I see over and over again, even at the executive level, they don't understand their costs. So I'm glad that you brought that up. So how can someone get a hold of you?
LinkedIn, I'm active on LinkedIn. If they just want to request me and send me a message, it's probably the easiest way. I
Well, you
still don't
have
say
to.
my email because I get spammed so much, but via LinkedIn.
Well, you have to also LinkedIn and get your posts because they're fabulous. I think you talk a lot about which are really the current issues within mortgage banking. And I want to thank you for joining us today. And certainly, I want to thank all our listeners and to subscribe. Certainly, go to patsherlock.com. Thanks again, Rich.
Thanks, Pat. As you know, I've been a fan for years, and I appreciate the work that you guys do and everything that you teach the industry.
Yeah, I appreciate having you for sure. That's a wrap for this episode. Be sure to subscribe, leave a review, and share it with your team. Want more proven sales strategies? Visit patsherlock.com for expert resources, coaching, and sales training. Until next time, keep selling smarter and not harder.